Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 246 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Al.
I'm Mike. Well, wait, I'm not. I'm Anton. are you Mike?
I'm not Mike. Oh. We haven't got Mike this week. Mike is being unusually clever this week. Mike is at a CERN conference. It's the CERN conference for massive-brained people. He's contributing to the groundbreaking physics and science being done there. With sort of mixing with the likes of the eminent Professor Brian Cox. Generally, he's contributing his wisdom and knowledge to the world to make it a better place.
Very proud of him. He's very smart. Unless you're listening live as one of our patrons, you might not have seen him recently, but he does look like a Funko Pop these days. It's a lot of brain for his body. So it's good for him to have some company.
Either that or you just say he's got a big head, which, let's face it, we would also agree with.
Very much. And on that note, how's your week been, Al?
Oh, my week has been fine. Thank you very much, Anton. I've actually got a bit of gaming in. I've not bought anything this week. Well, I tell a lie. I bought a bit of DLC, actually. So everybody knows I play Boomerang Foo, and my son plays Boomerang Foo, and all of my son's friends play Boomerang Foo, and everybody that I know with a Switch has basically bought Boomerang Foo because of me, and I've bought it because of Mike. So really, it's all his fault. But this week, I finally splurged the enormous, like, £2.50 or whatever it is to buy the Inverted Commas DLC, which is basically just 4 additional skins for some of the characters. So 50p a skin, it's fine. We've been playing this game so much, I don't mind paying a couple of extra quid for it. So I did that. But then more than that, I've been playing some free games. I've been doing some demos. So last week I'd started the demo of Europa. I have still started the demo for Europa. I've got a bit further. I still don't get it. I've still just been jumping around going, I have no idea what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and this is just a bit boring and I've given up. But I also play the demo of Cat Quest 3, and I'm loving that. I was not expecting to love that, but it's so much fun. It's packed full of good cat puns, and the action is simple but fun, and just, I'm smitten. I'm smitten as a kitten.
That was not on my bingo card for what Al plays this year, because I don't remember you at least talking a lot about having played the other games.
I have not. In fact, I've always been slightly derogatory of them because generally I'm not a cat person. Mm. But I thought, you know what? That demo looked relatively fun. I may as well give it a bash, and I'm glad I did, because it's a thoroughly amusing little romp. It's so good. I like sailing my little ship around and just shooting things in my little battleship and then going on land and slashing things and then shooting things with my little gun and upgrading them, and I'm having so much fun with it.
This is just your... It's not nothing to do with the cats. It's just Assassin's Creed Black Flag for you.
It's Assassin's Creed Black Flag with cutesy graphics. That's exactly what it is.
Incredible. Do you think you'll pick it up once it releases officially?
I'm not going to lie, I'm quite tempted to. I may have to buy it under the guise of buying it for my son, but that doesn't mean I don't get to play it.
A beautiful excuse. It's all working out.
It is. What about you? Have you managed to squeeze in some Switchy goodness this week?
A little. I have played some more of Tears of the Kingdom. I'm slowly running out of shrines to do, so I will need to move to something else to do in that game.
Just go. Just complete the game, complete the story. It's so satisfying when you do it. I mean, you'll never pick it up again. I've not picked mine up again since I completed it, but it's really satisfying just knowing you've finished that, you've done that story. Yes!
That's almost part of the fear. Because, like, what?
Well, the problem is, you can run out of steam, and then you'll get distracted by something shiny, and you will never go back and complete that story. So just while you're in it, strike while iron is hot, finish the story. That's my advice.
All right. I'll see how I get on. And yeah, I think that's all for Switch for me. I've kind of been dithering around a bunch of miscellaneous consoles this week, as I often do. And that has been the highlight of my gaming week. And yeah, I'm trying to think. If people are enjoying this odd, rather bizarre rambles we're having this week, where would be the best place to get more rambles and other stuff?
Well, I mean, they could go down to the newsagent and buy, I presume, gaming magazine still exists. Is Gamesmaster still a thing? That's a good place to get some gaming news.
I think that's long gone now. I think the Edge
still lives. The library maybe still has some magazines about video games. Possibly. Actually, genuinely, I was actually looking in the stores of Tesco this week. I know I'm segueing away from what you're trying to talk about, but I was genuinely looking for a video game magazine to see if I could get one for Son, who, as I mentioned last week, is getting a Switch for his birthday. I thought, I wonder if I could buy him an actual physical magazine he could flip through, safely looking at video games without, you know, letting loose on the internet, I couldn't find one. There wasn't a single video game magazine on the store of our local Tesco. Oh. I was very disappointed.
Yeah, I think I still see the Edge magazine. I still see Retro Gamer. And I think the PlayStation one, but it's been a while since I've seen that one. That was the kind of last holdout. Nintendo got rid of theirs during the Wii U era. Xbox, late Xbox One era. It's sad era. I think we should start a video game magazine. Seems like a good business. Not a lot of competition these days.
None. I reckon we could wipe the floor with none of that competition because, yeah, I genuinely do think there is a market there. I think because I've been away long enough, if you're to start making one, people will buy it for the novelty factor. Anyway, that wasn't what we were supposed to be doing. So if you don't want to go to the newsagent and buy yourself a magazine, where else can you get information about podcasts then and video games?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
You head to nsukp.co.uk/support-us. That's where you can learn all about our Patreon. It's just £2 per month. You get access to the Discord where we have a lovely and vibrant community. You get to listen to the show live as we are right now on Discord. You get access to show notes. You get access to our bonus show Last Call where we ramble a little bit about absolute nonsense. I can't even recall what we spoke about last time, Al, but it was probably inconsequential to the existence of the human race. But it was a lovely chat nonetheless. And tons of other lovely bits and bobs. So do head to the website to learn all about our Patreon. Just £2 per month. nsukp.co.uk/support-us.
Something like that. I mean, you've listened to us long enough. You've probably figured this out. Even if we make a mess and a hash of it, you know where to go. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. If people actually don't want to subscribe to the Patreon, but they do just want to find us on other platforms and see what we're saying, can they do that?
Indeed. That would be at NSUK Podcast. That's on X. That's on Facebook. That's on YouTube. There is a miscellaneous collection of reviews and an interview on the YouTube and some snippets of some older shows. You can see how much we've aged, but you won't have the afterfall. You have to go to the Discord to find that when you listen live, because we haven't recorded the show with video for a while. Nevertheless, at NSUK Podcast, and also got the website generally. That is nsukp.co.uk, and you can learn all about us and what we do.
You know what? We need to get ourselves onto Diplodocus. Or Brachiosaurus.
Aye.
Or Mastodon, whatever it's called.
Oh, yep.
I could see your face going, what is he talking about?
Yes. one day, yes. That and TikTok, we'll move up with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely, because the kids are all using Mastodon.
Absolutely,
definitely.
They love it.
Okay, let's go talk about some games news.
Tell us that people want to know.
Jackbox Games. We all love the Jackbox games. They are great fun. Jackbox Games have announced Jackbox Naughty Pack for Nintendo Switch. Tell me more about it, Anton.
Well, it's Jackbox, but naughtier. And it comes out this year at some point.
What else? What else do we know about it?
It has a Jack, and he is in the box, but naughty.
Oh, wow. What else?
It is a party game.
Uh-huh. What else?
And it's got naughtier prompts, presumably. We know absolutely nothing about this. And in fairness, you didn't really need naughtier prompts for Jackbox to become naughty anyway. But I guess this helps. And I won't lie, I'm kind of sold. Because it's an icebreaker.
I don't understand
game.
It, because I mean, any time I've ever played Jackbox, it has always been incredibly, I'm going to use the word naughty, because that's just the kind of people me and my friends are. It's never been clean, ever. It's always rude and inappropriate and usually quite offensive.
Yeah, I do wonder with this if, you know, because quite often when you're playing Jackbox, it kind of becomes a shock factor competition. I wonder if it'll kind of skip that phase of just like, with it being raunchier from the start, with presumably raunchier prompts, if it'll, you know, challenge, make people actually be more comedic, more strategic in their comedy.
Possibly. My trick to Jackbox, which weirdly seems to work a lot of the time, is just to add an adjective. Mm. Do you know when it ever says to describe something, or what did the biggest flip in Australia? And instead of going, a rhino, you go, a grumpy rhino. And people go, hey, you've read the word grumpy, or, I don't know, a thirsty ferret, or just any sort of adjective just seems to help you win. I don't understand why. It's such a simple thing.
So I think the main kind of question I have for this one is whether or not it's going to be all original games or if it's going to be some classics with some new prompts. I won't lie, I think just with this being having its own spin on it, I would just be happy if they just had some classics with some new prompts. But how about yourself? Would you be happy with that, or would you want to see some new raunchier games as part of this collection?
You know what, Jamie, that is a good question. I hate myself for saying this, but I'm sort of running out of steam for enthusiasm for the Jackbox games. They are really good fun, but I've got such a library of them now. I must own like six of these packs. I really don't need any more. And I don't know how many other people feel the same way. I don't know how many people bought tons during lockdown because it was one of the best ways to interact with your friends over the internet. But I feel saturated. I say I don't actually need any more Jackbox. And if they were to give me new ones with new prompts and it was all new games, I honestly don't think I'd go and buy it because I have enough. Do you feel differently?
Oh, I'm kind of in the same boat where I kind of have my go-tos. And then like I had like one or two other packs, and like, you know, if it's a longer session, you dip into those other packs. But to be honest, beyond my go-tos, I've only really played the other games a couple of times. It's, you know, it's Quiplash, it's Fibbage, it is Murder Mystery Party. And that's kind of me happy. And if we're wanting to kill more time, I've got a bunch of random other ones that I don't play as much. So I've kind of got my fix. I think, for at least me personally, I've got a bunch of the older ones. I think the newest ones I've got is like six or seven. They've went on and made a lot more. I would like one of ones with the like Zoom integration and stuff like that, but haven't pulled the trigger yet.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
No, neither have I. And in all honesty, when I buy them now, I buy them on my Mac so that I can just easily do a Zoom call or Teams call or whatever and just share the screen. And that's nice and simple. You can't really do that from the Switch. So it's slightly hobbled. I feel bad. I want to be really positive about this. I really do because I love these games, but I've reached saturation point. Let's move on and talk about a game that I have to admit I'm quite also taken by and very curious by, and would love to know how the lawyers managed to do it because there's so much IP in this. So 1010 Games, and that's sort of 10:10, 1010 Games announces Funko Fusion for the Switch, featuring over 60 different characters. It's coming out on the 13th of September. The launch trailer features characters from Jurassic World, The Umbrella Academy, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, The Thing, Masters of the Universe, Hot Fuzz, Battlestar Galactica, Invincible, Shaun of the Dead, Nope, Back to the Future, Five Nights at Freddy's, Xena Warrior Princess, Jaws, Jurassic Park, Voltron, Knight Rider, Chucky, The Mummy, and Megan. I mean, they have kind of taken every single awesome IP and mashed them into a single game full of Funko people and added lots of gory violence. I love it.
Yeah, this is absolutely not what I was expecting from a Funko game. If you'd given me the kind of IP of Funko and all the possibilities, I would have expected something closer to a Lego game here, but this is just bizarre. It's almost like it's a third-person shooter with, to be honest, quite a lot of horror characters in there. it's taking itself surprisingly seriously for characters that don't even have mouths. It's very bizarre, never mind the combination of characters they've gotten here. I'm hoping it's a little bit like Lego Dimensions, where they feel like the characters and they have their own little stories and worlds and all that, but it is just so bizarre. And it's also seemingly like a single player game. It doesn't look like a games as a service. Very impressive graphics for how simple the Funko Pops are. It is a complete left field. I was not expecting to see anything like this, Hal.
No, not in the slightest. It has come absolutely out of nowhere. And actually, until you said they don't have mouths, I have never thought about it before. I've just flicked through the trailer. There is the odd mouth pops up, but the only Funkos I have are sitting in the desk in front of me right now. They're Ninja Turtles, and they all have mouths. So I've never thought about them not having mouths. But you're right. Most of them do not have a mouth. I'm really pleased that they've taken this. Because let's face it, a lot of the Funkos are fairly dark characters. They go into some very niche shows and very adult grown-up type shows for IP, for their inspiration for making these. I'm going to call them toys, dolls, figurines. I don't know what you want to call them. But they have a really good source material. And I think it's really cool that they've taken this and made a very grown-up game. I think it's a very grown-up game. I mean, I guess if you're teenage, you can probably quite comfortably play this. It's not like it's too gruesome. It's Funko Pops at the end of the day. But there's some scenes in there, you know, where they've been beheaded and there's blood everywhere, and it's not to be taken lightly. Let's put it that way. I have no idea what the story is, but it looks fun and bombastic and just over the top. The graphics look really, really good. I don't know what platform we've seen the trailer from. I suspect that's probably not Switch footage that we're seeing, because I think it's coming out on other platforms too, as far as I'm aware. In fact, if I skip to the end of the trailer, I can tell you what platforms it's coming out on. It is... Yes. Actually, I don't know if they even say.
It's the big free plus PC, if memory serves correctly. Yeah, Xbox and PlayStation, I can at least say that. But yeah, it's also quite interesting, is I think they've kind of went to Universal's or kind of one-stop shop to get a whole wide variety of IP, which I find exciting to think about what IP they've left on the table. Like, I know for yourself, Al, like, Star Trek is a big omission here. I believe, they've already got Back to the Future, but, you know, Universal has access to so much. I believe for America, they even have access to Peppa Pig. You know, who doesn't want to see Five Nights at Freddy's and Peppa Pig and Chucky side by side?
They would fit beautifully. Yeah, I just think this is a wonderful, random, left field, out of nowhere addition. I mean, I hadn't even heard rumour of there being a Funko game in the works. Had you?
I hadn't. You know, I've seen like a couple bits and bobs on mobile, but they have been closer to a Lego-esque experience. And alas, I was not expecting anything like this. And I think what also makes it kind of exciting is it's kind of doing that you can have all your toys in the same sandbox, you know, thing that Lego does, but kind of making a game for a different audience, a different age demographic, and a different market, which is quite fun.
Absolutely. Well, 4 months' time, we can find out whether it is as good as it looks, but I've got to say, I'm feeling quite excited and giddy about that one. Let's move on and talk about Digital Eclipse, who've announced Wizardry, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord. It's a first-person fantasy dungeon crawler RPG with 3D graphics. Now, this is coming out on the 23rd of May. It is a remake of I'm going to call it a classic, Apple II video game. I mean, this was one of the sort of the original games, and looking at it, you wouldn't necessarily know if someone told you that this was based on a very, very, very old game until you see them side by side and you go, I like it.
Yeah, it's an incredible remastering of hitting a perfect balance between what was a very primitive, in terms of graphics, in terms of complexity, Apple II game, and, you know, modern graphics. So it still plays very much the same of, you know, you're moving, you know, tiles, you know, down a hallway in a first-person perspective. You're not looking around in 3D, but the graphics are all now 3D. And you kind of go into a room and then it kind of behaves like a turn-based RPG. You have a party. I love how faithful they have been in kind of porting this classic game and bringing it to the modern day. They could have went just absolutely wild and made it a big old modern 3D RPG, or even made it so you were doing the hacking and slashing or walking around in 3D, but you're very much on rails as you would have been with a lot of old dungeon crawlers. Very impressed, I'm hoping, because it is from a, let's say, a less friendly era of gaming, that it has some aids for the modern gamer, shall we say.
Yes, we have got quite used to our save games and be able to go back when you mess up and all kinds of stuff. I have just one thing I don't understand about this. So they've built this whole new game from the ground up that is paying homage to this original one, So why have they made it look visually like they did this 20 years ago instead of now? I mean, as much as it's a lovely homage, it doesn't look like this is a new game. I'm going to call them sprites, because some of them are for proper 3D models. I think they kind of all are 3D models, but they don't look like current ones. They're all a bit blocky and a bit janky and a bit ugly, and they don't sit nicely in their environment. The lighting isn't really working on them. They look like a game from the year 2000. And I don't understand that. Why have they made this design decision? If you're going to create something that is supposedly holding up a light and a candle to this original game, this genre-defining, you know, carver of the way, why would you do such a crap job? Why would you not make it look as beautiful as you possibly could now, so it still worked the same way? It worked as if it was, you know, on this rails, and you're definitely still looking at this old game, but it looked better. I just feel like they've missed a trick here. I feel let down.
Yeah, you know, I think when looking at, you know, if we were doing a polygon count, it would definitely be of that kind of PS2 era. And yeah, I think it is kind of a tough spot to fall into, where it's just not retro enough yet. You know, it looked like a PS1 game. Like, we had that new Fantasy Cotton game, which was remaking a kind of an SG-1000 game and bringing it up to a PS1-esque aesthetic. You know, there's a lot of nostalgia for that era, but this era here doesn't quite have the same flair, and it's not the most eye-catching. But obviously, compared to Apple II stuff, still gorgeous, but it's an interesting line to aim for.
It's a very weird one. It's a very weird decision, and you'd almost think it must be harder to hit that mark than to do a modern version of these things these days, because the tools are all around to make things look very pretty, very beautiful. You must have to go to quite a lot of work to make it look, in inverted commas, that bad. It doesn't look bad, it just looks old. It's a deliberate design decision. I don't imagine this is sloppy coding in any way, shape or form. I just think it's a weird decision. Anyway, I'm not going to get bogged down on this. Anything more to say before I move on?
I'm happy with our thoughts on that game there.
Lovely, thank you very much. C2 Game Studio announces Aster Blade of the Monolith, published by Versus Evil. It's a hack and slash adventure with a 20-hour campaign. It's out now. And I have a funny feeling this is a renamed game, isn't it? Was this not formerly being bandied around with a different moniker?
It was. Did have a different name.
Monolith Requiem of the Ancients.
There we are. Found it. But it was not confirmed for Switch when it had that name. Has a new name now. And yeah, it is, to be honest, it's not quite clicking for me. It's nothing super wrong with it. It's kind of Souls-like gameplay, but not in a Souls game. So I think for that, it's quite fun. But yeah, it's just looking a little simple. It's not really reinventing the wheel. Just everything's like up to code. They've done a game. It looks good. It doesn't look broken. But nothing more. Am I being cynical, Al? Or how are you feeling about this one?
I think maybe a little bit warmer than you. I wouldn't say I'm massively warmer than you. It looks, I'm going to say, accessible, which is what's making me go, yeah, maybe. There's a lot of, when it has its fighty moments, its fight scenes, there's sort of visual slowdown, which makes you think that makes it slightly easier for people like me who panic and don't have a clue what button they're supposed to press and end up dying as a result. See my thoughts last week on the Life of a Crab, whatever the thing was called, where I kept dying over and over again and got fed up and very grumpy very quickly. So this kind of looks kind of cool. I like the visual aesthetic they've gone for. It's kind of bright and simple, but doesn't look cheap. The combat looks interesting enough without being too overly simple. I'm kind of thinking that this looks solid, but nothing to write home about. I'm kind of agreeing in as much as I don't think it's breaking the mold. It's not doing anything I've not really seen before. But equally, I don't think it looks like a bad game. I think it looks absolutely eminently fine.
I concur. Fine Game of the Week award goes to...
It is. Unlike this next one, which I think is more than fine, it looks positively weird and wonderful. Jasper and Jonas announces Surmount for the Switch, a clumsy physics-based rock climbing game out now for $13.49. Anton, tell me about it.
Yeah. It is, you know, simple 3D graphics. You're playing on a 2D plane. You're kind of anchoring yourself on points. You're flinging yourself up the mountain. And it is just very careless in its gameplay. in kind of in a fun way, not dissing the game, but careless in the sense that you're just taking it chill. It's not meant to be stressful. It reminds me of almost like a co-op or a getting over it of just kind of weird, awkward controls, but it's simple and you can cause mayhem in co-op as you're seemingly anchored between two players. Like, it's Knuckles Chaotix, and you can kind of just use your mass to cause chaos or help, hopefully. Probably cause more chaos than helping, I think. I really like this. It looks fun. And I just like how chill it is. It doesn't seem like it's taking itself seriously, Al.
Not in the slightest. When I saw the trailer for this, I thought, this has Anton written all over it. We know Anton likes a good climbing game. For some reason, they just seem to be your thing.
It's my two rules of gaming. Go fast, go up. It's ingrained. It's part of my soul.
Wait, you had one where you liked it when you went fast and you went down, one of the downhill mountain bike games. I remember you went down and you really enjoyed it.
Downhill, yeah, speed good. If I could go up, I would have, but it was only downhill.
There you go. But no, this one does, it just looks so much fun. It's chaotic and scrambly and just bonkers, and I love games like this. What's weird is you kind of got a base camp village that you kind of explore and build out relationships and meet people and presumably upgrade gear and stuff. I don't actually know. And then you go up onto this hill and you try and get higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And it just looks... the characters look like ragdolls being flung around the mountain. And I have no idea how you control them. I suspect, because you don't know from the trailers, I suspect it's sort of maybe left stick for left hand, right stick for right hand, and you're just flinging yourself around because it sort of looks like you anchor with these hands in a very weird way. Mm. The whole physics of this thing is just... fun and different, and I think this is just a cut above the rest. What I also love about this game is the fact it's actually out early, because it was announced this came out on the 9th of May, and the developers went, we finished early, here, have it, and they put it out a whole week early. I mean, that is the exact opposite of the kind of normally there's, like, you know, there's crunch to try and get things out by the deadline and everyone's having a horrendous time. I kind of get the impression with this one they had quite a nice time building this and they just happened to finish it early and went, all right, well, let's just put it out. Here you go, guys. It's just lovely.
You know, a game getting released early is like the ultimate seal of, like, it works. You know, you don't release a broken game early. So it's like, if it's been released early, it's like, they've had time to polish it and they ran out of things to polish. So here it is.
Absolutely. $13.49. I think this looks like it's a bargain. I would be quite happy going and paying full price for this at $13.49. I just can't see how you wouldn't enjoy it. I can't see this being a bad investment.
No, it looks fun. And on a side note, it really makes me wish Chassant would come to Switch. If you've got access to that game, it's fantastic. And it would be perfect on the console. Another classic go-up game.
Okay, let's talk about something sort of slightly less fun. Nintendo's penchant for takedown notices and protecting their IP. So this week, I know at least a couple of people on our Discord posted this. There was a bit of chat about it. So Sandbox Games, Sandbox Game, Gary's mod, has removed all Nintendo-themed user-created items from the Steam Workshop. They issued a little statement saying, some of you may have noticed that certain Nintendo-related workshop items have recently been taken down. This is not a mistake. The takedowns came from Nintendo. If you want to help us by deleting your Nintendo-related uploads and never uploading them again, that would help us a lot. So, I mean, this is another interesting one, because they've got these takedown notices for user-generated content, some of which has been up for a very long time and has probably been abandoned by the users, and they're going to have to go through literally thousands of mods and manually remove them. So they're basically asking the community, going, if you put some out, could you just take it down and please don't put it back up because we don't want to get sued by Nintendo. That's really what we're saying, right?
Yeah, and it's a real shame here, because at least kind of from my perspective, this would have been fair use, but I think Nintendo have been so litigious over the past few years that nobody really wants to bother. Nobody wants to put up a fight or, you know, stand for what content is fair use and what, you know, deserves to be out, because this is not the Gary's Mod team that's put this out. It is the community that's made this, and it's a shame that it's coming down, especially as this has kind of been the status quo for a long time. And Gary's Mods,
so actually, do you want to explain, do you know, because it's something I wasn't really aware of. Can you explain Gary's Mod? Do you know much about it yourself?
Yeah, it's a... So for PC, there is, you know, a game called Gary's Mod. It's built on the Source Engine, and basically it pulls assets from a bunch of the kind of Valve games. They've got a working relationship with Valve, and people can make miscellaneous little games within of it. So there's, you know, prop hunts and stuff like that. It's games made by the communities, but you can pull in all of these different assets that you can download from the workshop and or you can get from different games within of your games library. So it's pulling in files from, you know, for instance, Counter-Strike or Portal, and, you know, bringing them in that way. And it's kind of this sandbox game where you can do and build and, you know, create whatever you want. And the kind of community has been what has been what's kept this game alive for so long, for all the creativity. And, you know, people naturally, when you give them creativity, they're going to make Minecraft amongst other IPs. And Mario was probably in there as well, and has been. So it's a real shame this is coming down, especially considering it is the community. Nobody's been making profit off it. I'm sure Nintendo would argue that Garry's Mod's entire profits have came solely from the fact there's Nintendo models made by the community accessible via the game. But it's a real shame because, end of the day, if you pick up Mario Maker, I've played Mission Impossible levels, I've played Sonic levels, there's a whole bunch of user-created content in that game that is inspired from other IPs which have been made by fans and Nintendo's not making money directly off of.
I just opened Steam and had a look at it. The very, very top most helpful review is, I hate Nintendo.
It's a real shame. I'm sure the Steam community are not very happy with Nintendo. A little distant.
They don't make fans of themselves, really, Nintendo, do they? I mean, as much as we are fanboys and we love their games, we know that they do fantastic hardware, fantastic software, they really know how to go about just getting people's backs up. They're the worst company in the world at building fan loyalty. They go out of their way to create horrible experiences everywhere they go, on their own platforms and off it. I mean, just look at the Switch UI, look at their online experience, and then look at the way they go and take down everything the enemy does vaguely creatively with their IP. Basically, people who go, I love Nintendo's IP so much, I want to go and replicate and do something with it and show my love. No, you can't do that. You must take it down. What weird company they are.
Yeah, the one for me is like, oh, wow, I love this game. I'll go listen to the soundtrack on YouTube because I can't listen to it on Apple or Spotify or Google Music. And of course, they don't want people giving away the music they won't even sell.
It's just weird. And I'm getting to the point where now I think their lawyers are just bored because they're taking everything down and now they're kind of just casting on the internet going, anyone seen our name anywhere? There's like a person wearing a red hat anywhere. What about that guy? He's got a mustache. Can we take him down?
If you're Mario listening to this podcast, you better lock your doors tonight. It's not looking good.
If your name is Mario, well, I'm terribly sorry, but you have to change your name now. Nintendo's after you.
But nevertheless, real shame, especially as, you know, these will be assets that will be incorporated into, you know, people's game modes and maps and stuff like that, that, you know, will be yoinked out of existence. And, you know, some of those maps and, you know, other pieces of creation content that's kind of second generation, shall we say, you know, some of that will get updated, a lot of it won't be, and that's a shame.
Yeah, alright, well, it's enough Nintendo kicking, let's big them up, let's talk about how wonderful and great they are, because, you know, when it comes to games, we all know they're the best. So, this next story is about Paper Mario The Thousand Years Door. What can possibly go wrong? Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door is going to run at 30 frames per second on the Switch. The original ran at 60 frames per second. Loyal fans are quite upset, Anton, to the point where, Bayonetta Origins Cereza, I don't know how you pronounce it, and the Lost Demon director, Abebe Tenari, has shared sympathy on X with the Paper Mario team, saying citing the various challenges that they faced making their own games for Switch. So basically, we've got Nintendo making a game that's not particularly running very well, and it's being defended by other developers going, yeah, the Nintendo platform is really hard to develop for, but this is a Nintendo product.
You know, it's an interesting one to kind of see the discourse about this online. There's two major camps. There's one camp of, it's a simple game that ran at 60 frames per second on the GameCube, and then there's another camp of, it doesn't need a high frame rate. And to be honest, I agree with both of them. You know, the fact that Tears of Kingdom runs as smoothly as it does on Switch, the fact Xenoblade Chronicles 3 runs as well, you know, these are other first-party Nintendo games that I feel push the hardware a lot more than Paper Mario does. So I feel like it should be running at a higher quality. But I almost, a part of me saw this and was like, yeah, you know, I wonder if it's like a late generation game and they were just kind of expecting their next bit of hardware to be here sooner. And, you know, that one would have ran at 60 frames per second, and this is the 30 frames per second last gen version that we've got here. But don't think it's going to hurt the game. It is just a shame that we're seeing the limitations of the hardware on a title that, to be honest, I would have hoped wouldn't have had those limitations.
See, you're blaming the limitations of the hardware. I'm actually going to blame the developers, because if we can get Bayonetta 3 running at 60 frames per second, you can get Doom 64 running 60 frames per second. There's a whole load. We have a long, long, long list of games that run at 60 frames per second that are graphically a lot more intense than Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. So I don't buy that this is a hardware limitation. I think this is just people being a little bit lazy. Tell me I'm wrong, but I don't see why they can't just make this run at that speed. There's no good reason that I can see.
Yeah, you know, it would be if it was, you know, just whatever methods they're using for lighting the game. It would be if they're kind of pushing it in terms of particle effects.
Mario Odyssey ran at 60 frames per second.
True.
That was like a launch title, and it's a 3D Mario. Why? This can easily run at 60 frames per second. I'm sorry. Yeah. It just can't.
Yeah, it's very, very possible, as you suggest. It is just being a, you know, a bit of a lazier job. They maybe, you know, when optimizing the game, they got to 30 frames per second. They're like, yeah, that's good enough for Paper Mario. Let's move on to porting Mario and Luigi or whatever's next. Because they've been churning these remakes out pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm disappointed. I mean, you're right, it doesn't need to run at 60 frames per second. It doesn't, and we probably, in all honesty, wouldn't actually notice the difference. So as much as I'm on my high horse about this, I'm to an extent playing devil's advocate. But I do just think, just for all the effort it would have taken to make it run at 60 frames per second, why would they have done it? Who knows? Because it cost them money, and that's why. Simple as that. It cost them money they didn't need to spend. Therefore, economically, you wouldn't bother doing it. Fine, I've talked myself out of it. They've done made the right decision. Move on. Shut up, Al. In fact, let's move into turbo mode.
Yes.
I love your giggling. You're just giggling away at me talking myself out of an argument.
It's classic Al. It's grumpy Al. I love it.
Okay, turbo mode. Well, as usual, I will run through the long list of things, not in one deep breath, because I'll go blue and pass out, and that'll be a very weird podcast, because it'll just be silence with Anton going, Al, and you guys don't want to hear that, so I'm going to breathe in between, and then I'll ask Anton what he would like to expand upon. Up first, Bandai Namco have announced That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, Isekai Chronicles for the Switch. It is a side-scrolling action RPG with flashy combos combined with a city builder. I mean, that's what this is in the trailer. It's coming out on the 8th of August. Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection Updates 2 is out now, fixing a wide range of bugs. Billy and Jimmy Lee from Double Dragon are coming to River City Girls 2 as premium DLC. Shadow of the Ninja Reborn gets a new trailer and a release date of the 29th of August. Hunter x Hunter Nen x Impact gets its first gameplay trailer. LEGO has released a trailer for two more LEGO Animal Crossing sets for release in August. The first appears to be a town hall, the second appears to be Dodo Airlines. Inti Crates will be releasing a physical collection of Mighty Gunvolt, Mighty Gunvolt Burst, and Puzzmix. They're going to call it the Inti Crates Gold Archive Collection. This collection will be released in Japan on the 20th of August. Nintendo stores in Japan have got a brand new line of Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom merch, including Zonai patterned shirts, a wing device rug, sacred stone pins, a bomb flower drawstring purse, and Zelda's earrings, as well as a ton of other stuff. Rogue Legacy 2 will be getting a physical release, courtesy of Limited Run Games, and Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth gets a release date, I should say, of the 21st of May. First for Figures reveals an Animal Crossing New Horizons Isabella figure, guaranteed to be overpriced, but you can pre-order it now. Shirin the Wanderer, the Mystery Dungeon of Serpent Coil Island, gets a free update, adding new Sacred Tree Dungeons, Dojo Challenge Mode, Expanded Storehouse, and more. And Wessex Auction Rooms has listed a 1 of 5 official Swarovski Bejeweled Nintendogs Nintendo DS. The console is expected to sell for between £15,000 and £18,000. Vampire Survivor gets a quadruple A, yes, AAAA update. The free laboratory update adds three weapons, a new stage and a new character, and Star Wars Hunter gets a Switch release date of the 4th of June. Finally, the Plucky Squire gets a release date of 2024. There you go. Very specific, Anton.
Yeah, I kind of saw that and I was like, oh, you've been hyping up that game a lot for, you know, not having a full date yet. I was kind of expecting that to either, yeah, to have a date yet. Yeah, nevertheless, happy we're getting it this year. Hopefully they've got enough time to finish it to a state they're happy with. Going over a couple bits and stories that caught my eye this week. I went to the Swarovski website recently for unrelated releases to this DS. And I saw the prices. They're very expensive. And I, you know, now that we've got this DS on the market, I'm like, you know what? It's not bad. Not bad. Compared to some of these nonsense expensive crystals they sell there. I'll take a DS over that. Outside of overpriced retro gaming hardware that just has, you know, little gems glued to it, I'm almost tempted to get Rogue Legacy 2 physical. I absolutely loved that game. It was one of my favorite games of last year. It just sucked me in and consumed me, and I didn't leave for months. Very, very enticed or kind of keen on that. It would be nice, but I know it's limited run games, it'll be expensive, and I could buy other video games for it, so probably not. Moving beyond that, it is nice to see some more of Shadow of the Ninja. It's not anything groundbreaking, but I just saw the trailer for it, and it's just serving Mega Drive, Super Nintendo, 16-bit platforming, giving the energy of Strider. It's a game that we've seen a few times, but I just saw it this time, and they showed, you know, the content they showed, I was just like, you know, it's simple, it looks fun, and I love that 16-bit era. So it was appealing to my interest. Hunter x Hunter, Hunter Nen x Impact got its first gameplay trailer. It's kind of like a 3D BlazBlue, you can kind of tag players in and out, fighting game. Looking polished. It'll be interesting to see if it can garner an audience outside of its anime fan base, but I think they've done a very good job in putting it all together. But that was what stuck out to me this week. Al, what jumped out to you?
Could I say quite a lot of the same things, actually. I've got highlighted and bolded, so I remember to talk about them. So first of all was Shadow of the Ninja Reborn. Completely agree with you. I love what they've done with it. Their latest release trailer has sort of side-by-side footage of the old game and the new game. So they show you the same bits, and then what they've done, they've kind of, I can say, upgraded some of the characters. They've gone from just sort of skinny little sprites to big, muscly people that look like they're mean business. And just everything is just, it's just been so wonderfully done. It translates so beautifully from the old to the new, and you can see where the thought process has gone, where all this love and work has gone. The game itself, it's fine. I mean, it's a classic, good fun game. Traditional kind of platformer, you run around, slash and bash your way through bad guys. It's not groundbreaking anyway, but I do like the execution of what they've done. I just think it looks really, really nice. Well done in games. You're doing a good job by the look of that. I also wanted to talk about that time I got reincarnated as a slime, Isekai Chronicles, because I've seen the trailer. It's quite a long trailer. In fact, actually, if I bring it up, I can tell you the trailer itself is 3 minutes, which is about a third longer than most trailers. They're normally about a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes. This is 3 minutes. And you go through it at the beginning and go, yes, this makes perfect sense. I've seen these before. This is a traditional kind of game. And then they go, city building. And you go, what? And sure enough, there's a whole city building element in there. They've just wedged this city builder in where you build buildings and you upgrade them. And by upgrading your buildings, you make your characters stronger. And it's just bonkers. I don't know who thought to mash these things together. I was playing Game Dev Tycoon this week, and you know, I don't know if you've ever played Game Dev Tycoon, but the idea behind it is you basically are a developer, and at the start of each gaming creation you pick two genres and you mash them together, and that's what your game is. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and it's like they took RPG and City Builder and mashed them together just to see what would happen.
You know, I hadn't thought of it like that, but I've played Game Dev Tycoon, and that is absolutely it. It was very much like we got to city builder element of it, and I was like, why was there not more of this? make that the meaty part of the portion, and then you have the kind of, you know, the dungeon part of upgrading and kind of bringing resources. It was a bizarre mix.
It's so weird. But I got to say, the title is looking, visually, it's a really nice title. It's your traditional kind of anime look. It's probably not groundbreaking in any way in its visuals, but it's just appealing and it's nice. And I just think this is such a wacko, bizarre combination of things to put together. And I really hope it succeeds. I hope it pulls this off and it's not just this weird, jarring juxtaposition where two random games have been bizarrely stuck together in a Frankenstein's monster type of thing. But I just thought I wanted to talk about that one so much because it was so weird. The Swarovski bejeweled Nintendogs DS. I just look at that and go, why? Nintendo commissioned these in the first place. So these were created for Nintendo by Nintendo. It was NYC Peach was the designer. So they're designed with these crystals. And I kind of just look and go, that is A, really ugly, B, really tacky, and C, looks really uncomfortable to hold, and D is probably quite heavy. Let's face it, the DS was never particularly light in the first place. It wasn't heavy, but it wasn't super light. It wasn't like holding a box of air. So adding a load of crystals to it is not going to make that experience any better. It's just so ugly. Who would pay £15,000 for this?
Yeah, you know, I must confess, it doesn't look any better than like the fake stick-on, you know, just sheets of crystals you can get.
Yep, that's kind of what it looks like. Someone's just done. They just like wrapped one of them around it. It's just like bleh, bleh, bleh. It's not nice.
So not an investment piece. Not one to pass on to your son when he gets older.
I can't see anybody making money on that one at all. Not on slightest. And then as much as I've not played Vampire Survivor, I just wanted to big up this update, this DLC that they're bringing out, because they themselves have bigged it up so much in the trailer that I just love them for it. They have come out swinging with this one. As I said, branding it this quadruple A update, and it brings mechanics where you can open a door. It adds Santa Claus. It adds real train mechanics as a train thunders through the screen and kills everything. It's just so fun. It's so tongue-in-cheek and wonderful. I love these developers and these marketing people.
Yeah.
They deserve a big pat in the back.
You know, the thing with Vampire Survivor, it's like got zero graphics and it's still so fun and addicting that the fact that they've added an animation in this one, whew, wow.
Fully rendered running animation, yeah. Anton. Fully rendered. They've pulled out all the stops
it's
here.
It's satisfying all the senses now. Before, fun game, but, you know, the visual part, not so much. But
wait for them to add the ASMR update, then you get that as well. And oh boy, you'll be sensory overload.
Oh, the 7.1 Dolby Atmos update. You know, have the full skill set, but nevertheless, incredible. If you've not played it, have not picked it up, they basically give it away for free. So do give it a go.
It is awesome. And yeah, lastly, just a little nod, as you've already mentioned, the Plucky Squire. It is still a wonderful looking game. I love it. I just don't quite understand why they put out this post on X, which literally says, we will be launching the Plucky Squire this year. We haven't announced the release date yet, but we're working hard on the game for PC and console release in 2024. Stay tuned. That's it. I was like, what's the point of putting that out? Is that just to remind people it's still there? I mean, why?
Yeah, it's also like, we're halfway through the year. I feel like just being like, it's coming out summer or it's coming out winter. Would
bonkers.
Have been something.
Absolutely bonkers. Okay, let's move on and talk about rumours.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
And this week, we do actually have rumours.
No way.
We have, well, technically you have 3 bullet points. I'm going to treat them as 2 because 2 of the bullet points are kind of the same rumour. Different points of view, different sources. Same thing. So let's talk about the first one first, which is the UK Games Rating Board, Peggy, has rated Hi-Fi Rush for the Nintendo Switch with a release date of the 30th of April. Not a big surprise it's coming. We all knew that. We didn't know it was coming the 30th of April, which was like 3 days ago. Huh?
Yeah. You know, this is a bit of a surprise. It did seem very likely that we were going to get it earlier in the year. It seemed like at the previous partner showcase, it seemed like they're already. We had, you know, leaks of the code of the Hi-Fi Rush on other consoles that were showing T-shirts that kind of showed the game coming to Nintendo Switch. It seemed very, very likely, and it just never materialized alongside a rumored Sea of Thieves port. And now that we're getting this, I'm going to be curious what happens if people data mine this, because I suspect this game was targeting a different console, whatever the next generation Switch console was. And I'm curious if there's any evidence of that, or am I just making up lies to keep the podcast exciting in our sixth season?
My suspicion is that this was maybe a targeted release date at some point, but it's just not been updated with Peggy, because they also rated it for the PlayStation, also released on the 30th of April, and it's been out on PlayStation for, what, since the 19th of March. So, you know, I'm not trusting these dates, I'm taking them with a pinch of salt, but I suspect at some point someone filled in a form saying, oh yeah, that's the date we're going to release it, and they've never bothered updating Peggy. That's my assumption. I might be wrong. Yeah. Usually,
you know, Peggy is pretty good for not leaking games. So I suspect, like you're saying, these were dates they were targeting at some point. And to be honest, at this point, it's kind of one of the worst kept secrets in, you know, upcoming Switch games. So it's not the biggest surprise, as we've mentioned.
Indeed. And talking about worst kept secrets in Switch, there's been more Switch 2 rumors this week. Quite a bit of them. People seem to be putting a fair bit of stock in them, so let's dive into them. According to Vandal, who previously made correct claims about the Nintendo Switch OLED, they have claimed that claims were made about Nintendo's next console. The insight from the accessory market: the console will be bigger than current models, but smaller than Valve's Steam Deck, and will support the Nintendo Switch Pro controllers. It also said the Switch is going to be ditching the Joy-Con rails for magnets. Now, linked to that at the same time this week, we also had some leaks from MobaPad. They're an accessory producer. The second generation of Nintendo console will be a conservative evolution of the Nintendo Switch, they said. MobaPad compares it to a Pro model. It will support a larger 8-inch 1080p screen. The second generation Joy-Cons will attach via an electromagnetic suction docking structure, which I think they did try to release, or they wanted to release with the original Switch, but they couldn't get it working. The new Joy-Cons will apparently feature metallic ZL and ZR buttons, and a new button on the side of the Joy-Con. A new function button has apparently also been added below the home button on the left Joy-Con. They go on to say the second generation console will be fully backwards compatible with digital and physical games. However, second generation games will not be supported on the first generation hardware. That makes sense. The console will support both current Pro controllers and Joy-Con controllers wirelessly only, funnily enough, if they need to connect with magnets. The second generation dock will feature a damping bracket on the back, allowing for a greater range of adjustable angles, and will allow games to output at 4K resolution to a TV. There's a lot in there, Anton, but before you get into the individual elements of it, how much stock do you put in these rumours?
Oh, I think for me, I'm rating these rumours quite highly. I think with the legitimacy of Vandal, the kind of leaked aspects about screen size, the kind of the kickstand on the Switch OLED, and the fact of an Ethernet jack and having a redesigned dock, they were right about all those things, and their history has been leaking things from the supply chain of accessory makers. Then with MobaPad coming out, I think it was like over 3 days later, with these rumors, it does line up in terms of that. And then also kind of breaking down the rumors they've got here, it's all very specific and not very groundbreaking. It's not very exciting, rumors. So I think that makes it a little bit more believable in terms of what we could be getting. And so I rate them quite highly. How about yourself? Do you put any merit into these rumors?
For the same reasons that you do, I do. They're a bit boring. There's nothing earth-shattering. There's nothing that's going to be necessarily grabbing the headlines and is going, oh, we're getting 4K and we're getting OLED, or there's nothing amazing going, two screens. It's all fairly dull stuff. Magnetic attachment for the Joy-Cons, I guess, is interesting. As I said, it was kind of mooted for the original one. We have heard rumour of that, albeit never substantiated. I still don't like that idea, because I could just picture myself playing in Switch, turning around, accidentally bending the magnetic,
rails.
Catch? Yeah, something like that, and then falling out. But I mean, if it's in a rail, I don't understand what that mechanism fully is. It's, I don't think it's just stuck on magnetically. I think there's an actual sort of rail thing there, and it's then being held in the rail by magnets so it maybe vibrates less or doesn't. I genuinely don't know. But it doesn't sound particularly groundbreaking. And all of this stuff is kind of in line with what we've heard before. We knew it was going to be 1080p screen again. We kind of heard it's going to be 8-inch and slightly bigger. We assumed it was going to be compatible with Pro controllers. We all hope it's going to be backwards compatible, and I have no problem with it being backwards compatible, but the new games are only playable on the new one. That's absolutely fine and reasonable. I think everybody would be happy with that. I don't see why not to believe these.
Yeah, you know, I think everything here is fairly sensible. You know, as you mentioned, the magnetic Joy-Cons has kind of been the piece that's kind of been making news, but that is something that we've heard was planned for the original Switch. I think the weirdest thing in here is the buttons on the kind of outer side of the Joy-Cons. So basically, if you had the Joy-Cons on the Switch hardware, it's kind of the bits that would be facing away from the screen. So interested to see what those would do. Having metallic trigger buttons, that's another one where I'm like, what would be the goal there? What would that add, or would that just be purely for build quality? But I feel like if you're making them metallic, you would want just the whole Joy-Con to be metallic and the other buttons to be metallic. Very bizarre, but hopefully we'll see eventually. But yeah, it all feels fairly reasonable, in line with other rumors, and I think in tandem with other rumors, such as the second generation Switch hardware supporting DLSS, it fills in the gaps of this rumor of such the, you know, dock, you know, allowing games to run at 4K. So yeah, I could see all this coming fairly true.
I have a theory about the electric triggers. It's so it can deliver you an electric shock. You know, You remember those old games where it's like you had the timer and every so often you like pass a ball around and someone's holding it and they went and you got zapped? I think that's what it is. It's delivering little electric shocks.
You know, if you die in the game, you die in real life. It's a bold move for Nintendo.
Oh man, that's harsher than I was picturing, dude.
I could see... and similar to the Meta Quest controllers and the Valve Steam Deck, both of them have a feature where it can sense when your fingers are on the triggers and on the sticks. Capacitive. They're both plastic in those cases, but I wonder if Nintendo would be interested in capacitive, you know, trigger. So, like, not pressing them, but it can tell when your fingers are hovering on them.
Maybe. That's as good a theory as any. I like it.
Yeah, but
I'm struggling to think why else they would have them, but we are not the creative people. Yeah. Nintendo are.
You know,
maybe. We'll see when we eventually get whatever this is.
Who knows? This is coming from accessory makers, so it might just mean they're shiny metal-looking buttons. It might actually not mean that they're metal or anything like that. It might just look like metal.
Oh, that would be bad. Please don't do that.
It would flake off so bad. No, it would be awful. No.
It would be terrible. Okay, well, that's it for rumours. We have no mics. There's no deals of the week. We have no mic, so Anton automatically gets a point in the quiz. 4-3, done.
Incredible. Wow. he's got a big brain. He'll win next week.
Absolutely. I mean, I've already got the quiz ready. It's prepared. Let me have a look at the quiz. I reckon you both stand a 50-50 chance of getting both games, so this will be interesting to see who gets it next week. Or whenever we get Mike back from the conference.
Yes. So if you've enjoyed the show, do head over to our website, nsukp.co.uk/support-us, where you can learn about the Patreon, just £2 per month. And you can follow us over to Last Call. That's our post show that we do after the main show, about 50% of the time. It comes after. It's different stuff. We talk about a little bit of everything. So do join us there. I believe this week we're going to talk a little bit about cancelled Switch games, but it's not always about Switch. It's random. And if you've enjoyed the show, do drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. That is, you're already on Apple Podcasts if you use Apple Podcasts. I don't need to tell you where to find us on there. You know, you understand, you're smart. And yeah, thank you for listening.
I have nothing further to add, so I'm just going to say cheerio!
Au revoir!